boring.
He crossed to her and breezed his thumb along the black smudge beneath her eye.
You're tired again.
A little. Tanner snorted at the understatement, and she shot him a narrow-eyed look. Rainey ushered them all toward the door.
I need to lock up.
After the studio was secure and the girls said their goodbyes and headed off, Harper looked up at Knox.
So, where are we going?
Since Knox would rather she got some rest, he was about to suggest they go straight home when she spoke again.
I hope it's a place with food. I'm hungry.
You're hungry?
Well, that made a nice change. If taking her somewhere meant she'd eat a little, then that was what he'd do.
Where do you want to go?
You're asking me to choose what we do?
He sifted his hand through her hair.
I like surprising you. But you're too tired for the surprise I had in mind. You pick what we do.
You're not going to be pleased about it, she warned.
Knox stilled.
You don't want to go back to the rodeo, do you?
Because that would be a big no.
She gave a soft chuckle. Nothing as wild as that. I just really feel like ice cream.
Ice cream?
Yeah. And you're more of a five-star restaurant kind of guy than a simple ice cream parlor person.
I know a good place to get ice cream.
Her brow furrowed.
There's a parlor on the corner.
I know somewhere better.
Really? Well, I don't care where we go, as long as there's ice cream. Lead the way.
Tanner and Levi flanked them as Knox led her down the strip to one of his hotels. While some places were closing, others were being opened and street vendors were setting up. The underground would only get busier as the hours went on. When they finally arrived at the luxury hotel and the automatic doors swished open, the cool air conditioning slid over them. As usual, some of the employees rushed to him with questions. Hiding his impatience, Knox answered them quickly and directly without breaking stride. He then guided Harper to the rear of the hotel and through a glass door. The quiet chatter of the lobby was quickly replaced by the sounds of children's laughter, spoons scraping bowls, and the whir of a blender.
Well, here we are.
Harper's eyebrows flew up. It was nothing like your standard ice cream parlor, she thought. It was more like a cute, chic restaurant. The decor was white and gold and had an almost royal look about it. There were glass-covered cases with several tubs of different colored and, according to the sign, award-winning ice creams. But instead of customers lining up at the counter, they sat comfortably while waiters took their orders.
I had no idea this was here.
Then again, she'd had no reason to come to these places before meeting Knox. Harper plucked the menu from the stand.
Damn, there were so many choices, so many different flavors, so many different toppings, and so many different syrups.
They had everything, from typical flavors like vanilla and chocolate, to others such as cotton candy and piña colada. When the host appeared, she ordered a waffle cone of salted caramel covered in butterscotch syrup and little chunks of honeycomb. When the waiter walked away, she frowned at Knox.
You're not ordering anything?
There's no point,
he said.
Why?
Because I'll get so distracted watching you eat that my ice cream would end up melting all over my hand.
Chuckling, she returned the menu to the stand and then rubbed her chilled hands together. It was a lot colder than the hotel lobby, but Harper supposed it had to be, or the ice cream would easily melt. It was only right then that she noticed that Levi and Tanner hadn't followed them inside.
Where are the sentinels?
Knox gestured to the glass wall behind her.
Waiting for us.
Giving them some private time while also guarding them. As a yawn crept up on Harper, she did her best to suppress it. She failed.
You went back to work too early,
he admonished.
You should have taken the day off to fully recover.
She gave a soft snort. Says the guy who's probably never taken a day off in his life.
There have been a few.
I don't mean days where you worked from home. I mean days of no work whatsoever. No calls or texts or emails to business associates. Can you honestly say you've ever had one of those days?
No, he couldn't. Point taken. But you still should have taken the day off instead of pushing yourself.
Those bastards aren't disrupting my life. He sighed.
So stubborn.
Proudly. Tapping his fingers on the table, he said,
I want to ask you something. It's probably not fair of me to ask this of you. It's not a customary thing among demons and is more of a human convention, but I'd like you to do it.
Dubious, she frowned. You're not going to ask me to get married in a church, are you? Mouth curving, he took her hand.
No. These rings say we're bound.
He smoothed his thumb over the black diamond, adding,
I'd like you to take my surname.
Her brows almost hit her hairline. Well, that wasn't something I'd ever have expected you to say. Maybe I should have. Your possessiveness knows no boundaries.
I won't deny that.
At least you're admitting it. Changing my surname doesn't seem necessary. I mean, it's not like people are under any doubt that we're together.
It's important to me.
No, it's important to your possessive streak. It was more than that.
I want my mate to share my surname.
Keeping my surname doesn't mean I'm not fully invested in this relationship, or that I don't believe it will last, she assured him.
I know that. And I fully admit that I want you branded in as many ways as it's possible to brand someone.
Knox didn't even care that that was unhealthy. He'd made his peace with it long ago.
But this isn't about taking possession of you.
Then what is it about?
I understand that your family name means something to you. The Wallace imps supported and loved you while your maternal family rejected you.
For that reason, they'd always have his respect and backing. Well, all except for her father, anyway.
I don't have a family to welcome you into. We'll be making our own family. And I want us to do that with one name.
Her chest tightened. Did you really have to put it that way? I don't know how to argue that. It was too sweet.
So don't.
He leaned forward.
At least think about it.
I'll consider it.
Thank you.
The waiter then reappeared, and Harper took the bumpy waffle cone with a wide smile. Thank you. She licked at the piece of art and groaned. The salted caramel ice cream was smooth and cold on her tongue. You're totally missing out, she told Knox. Eyes on her mouth, he said,
Oh, I assure you, I'm not.
He barely took his eyes off her mouth the entire time she ate. By the end, he was so damn hard he knew it would hurt to walk. When she was done, she cleaned her sticky fingers with a lemon wipe. Ready to go? He was ready to get her home where he could take her as he'd wanted to since the previous night. He let her see that in his expression, and he had the pleasure of seeing her pupils dilate and her cheeks flush.
I'm ready to go. Are you ready for me?
If it involves me coming multiple times, I'm totally ready. His cock twitched.
You'll come as many times as I want you to.
I don't know. Maybe I'm still a little too fragile for you. He snorted, rising to his feet.
Fragile is never a word I would use to describe you.
He kept possession of her hand as he guided her out of the parlor. Levi and Tanner fell into step with them as they walked down the long hallway toward the exit. Up ahead of them, the door to the hotel's restaurant opened and a bunch of people filed out. Harper recognized three of them, Thatcher, Jonas, and good old Alethea. The males were both primes, and Alethea was Jonas's sister. She also happened to be a pain in Harper's ass and liked to flirt with Knox, as if shaking the sheets with him in the distant past gave Alethea some rights to him. For a while, a whole lot of females had flirted with Knox, but the majority had recently stopped. They'd seen the black diamond he gave Harper and had accepted that it meant there was nothing at all temporary about her place in his life. She suspected they'd ceased to be bitches to her, as they'd rather not make an enemy of Knox. Smart move on their part. Alethea? Well, she didn't demonstrate the same wisdom. In fact, at that very moment, she shot him a sultry smile and said, "Evening, Knox." Her gaze then cut to Harper, and her smile fell.
"Sphinx?"
"Dolphin?" Yeah, Harper liked to call her that, since, as an encantada, Alethea could shift into the form of a dolphin. It was kind of a random ability for the ultimate sex demon, in Harper's opinion, but whatever.
"Knox, good to see you,"
said Thatcher, bushy eyebrows lifting slightly. It was probably wrong just how badly Harper wanted to pluck them.
"How are you?"
he asked. Knox inclined his head.
"I'm well, thank you."
Thatcher nodded at Harper. It wasn't so much a nod of respect from one prime to another as it was a simple acknowledgement of her presence, but she let it go. She wondered how long it would take the primes to realize she just really didn't give a shit if they accepted her or not. The fact that she was a Wallace would always be held against her to some degree. Jonas's smiling eyes danced from Knox to Harper.
"It's a pleasure to see you both. We haven't spoken since the celebration of the Underground's anniversary, have we?"
"No, we haven't," said Harper. She didn't mind Jonas. He was an okay guy, and he did his best to control his dumbass sister.
"Did the showcase agree to sell?"
Jonas asked Knox. As the boys started talking business, Alethea examined Harper from head to toe and smiled smugly. Yeah, Harper was quite aware that she resembled the living dead, and she hated that the dolphin was standing there looking the image of perfection. Alethea's smug smirk only rubbed salt in the wound. And because Harper could be a bitch, too, she said, "So, how's life in the red light district?" Behind her, Tanner snickered. Alethea's eyes tightened.
"You overstep far too often, Sphinx. I have to say, you look rather weary."
"And you look rather bitter," said Harper. "Still pissed about the rings, huh?" Alethea licked her teeth.
"I won't lie. I don't think you're the right person for Knox. But my brother is right. Knox is our ally. We should support his choices."
Like Harper would ever believe that. She smiled. "That's good to hear, even if it is complete tripe." Alethea's mouth curled.
"I said we should support his choices. I never said that I did."
And that was why Harper still believed that Alethea could be one of the horsemen. On the one hand, it could be said that surely she wouldn't draw so much of Knox's attention to herself if she was secretly conspiring against him. But Alethea was a she-demon scorned, and scorned she-demons were malicious creatures, especially when they had an ego as wide as hers.
"And I'm not the only one who'll never support this choice to have a Wallace for a mate,"
clipped Alethea. cared for about a ninth of a second. Then I remembered how stupid and insignificant it is.
Alethea leaned forward.
Did you know that in the dictionary, your name is under the word bitch?
Not sure why you're smiling. I'm not the one who had to look up the word.
Alethea sucked in a breath and went to bark something else, but then the boys ended their little conversation. Knox put a hand on Harper's back.
Ready to leave?
Totally. Harper gave Alethea a winning smile.
Well, it's been great talking to you. You know how much I enjoy these little chats we have.
Slipping his arm around Harper's waist, Knox nodded at the other three demons.
Enjoy your evening.
Leading her out of the hotel, he said,
It's hard not to intervene when she speaks to you that way.
I appreciate that you don't. She needs to understand that I can defend myself just fine. Also, it's really fun to toy with her.
Knox's mouth quirked.
Yes, I've noticed you enjoy it. My demon finds it just as amusing. But we're going to push her and the others out of our minds now. Yes, I've noticed you enjoy it. My demon finds it just as amusing. But we're going to push her and the others out of our minds now.
I have no issues with that plan, just so you know.
My plan also involves you, naked, in our bed.
Still have no issues with the plan.
Good to know.
Harper smiled. The anticipation crept up on her and taunted her the entire journey home. But when they finally walked into their bedroom, he looked at her just as he had this morning, like he was afraid he'd break her. She frowned.
You're not going to tuck me into bed, are you?
I couldn't even if I wanted to.
Knox thrust his hands into her hair, growling.
Open for me.
He kissed her, drinking her in. She tasted like Harper and caramel and honeycomb. And he couldn't get enough. He tilted her head, licking deeper, taking more, taking everything. Her hands delved into his hair, nails digging into his scalp. Groaning, he shoved his hand under her shirt and bra and closed it around her breast. It was soft, round, and plump. Perfect. Her hard nipple brushed against his palm. He wanted it in his mouth. Bunching the bottom of her shirt in his hands, Knox slid it up over her head and then whipped off her bra. The sight of the tattoo-like brand of thorns circling her breast made masculine satisfaction whip through him. She was his. Every single inch of her belonged to him. Only he could touch her, taste her, drive deep inside her. No other male would ever have her. He'd kill anyone who tried. Taking a fistful of her hair, Knox pulled hard, arching her back. He latched on tight to her pierced nipple, flicking the ring with his tongue and tugging it with his teeth. He breezed his thumb over the white ink, "So It Goes" tattoo beneath her breast, her own personal reminder not to dwell on things that were out of her control.
Undo your jeans, he rumbled. I want them off.
He needed to fuck her hard and deep. Harper's shaky fingers fumbled as she awkwardly snapped open her fly. He helped her shove down the jeans and panties, and then tossed her on the bed. Breathing hard, she watched as he quickly shed his own clothes, eyes drifting over her with sheer, unadulterated possession. Naked, he truly was a sight to behold. Not an ounce of fat there. His body was all solid muscle, controlled strength, and sleek skin that hummed with power. Then there was his long, thick cock that was currently standing to attention. She was just thinking of rearing up to touch him when psychic hands grabbed her thighs and spread them. She shivered. The hands were so icy cold, yet they somehow gave off pure heat, a heat that snaked up her inner thighs all the way to her center, making her tingle and burn. He reached out and skimmed the tip of his fingers over her folds. The light touch fired the need already taunting her. Knox crawled on the bed, eyes on her pussy. He wanted her taste in his mouth when he took her.
"I want you to be quiet for me."
She blinked.
"What?"
"You heard me."
Harper almost gaped. She was noisy, and they both knew it.
"You can't be serious."
But his expression said that he was.
"I don't want you to make a single sound until I tell you that you can."
"And if I do make a sound?"
"You'll regret it."
Oh, she didn't doubt that. He could be a sadistic fucker when he felt like it. To say that he liked control would be an understatement. It was important to him on a fundamental level. She couldn't hand over complete control to him. Her life was her own, but she could give it to him in the bedroom. Most of the time she did, since it always worked out well for her, but she didn't do it easily.
"Remember what I told you, Harper."
It was a silkily spoken warning.
How could I freaking forget?
There was a slight chill in the air as his eyes bled to black.
"Can't you be on my side?" she asked the demon.
Its mouth curved.
"I like the noises you make, but I also like to play."
As if to punctuate that, it sank one ice-cold psychic finger inside her. Instantly, her pussy began to heat until it was burning. Knox resurfaced and shot her a cautioning look that promised retribution.
"Not a sound."
Cursing, she grabbed his pillow and put it over her head. Harper bit back a gasp as he danced his tongue over the black, intricate swirl of thorns on the V of her thighs. It was the third brand of ownership that his demon had given her. As his tongue slid between her folds, she practically melted into the mattress. There were guys who would give a half-hearted attempt at oral and who treated it as a means to an end. Then there were guys who would go down on their partner like it was an Olympic sport, who took their time and enjoyed it. Knox was one of the latter, which made her a lucky bitch. Every lick and stab of his tongue was almost casual, as if he had no objective and simply wanted to taste her. If it wasn't for how hard his fingers dug into her tremoring thighs, she wouldn't know just how badly he wanted to be in her.
"I know you're hurting, baby,"
he said against her folds.
"I'll take it away soon."
He'd better. That was the thing. The psychic fingers didn't just work to rev her engines. They sparked an ache inside her that only Knox would fill. No one else would take it away. Just him. He kept on tasting and torturing her, and her orgasm soon began to build. She knew it would be a big one. There was no way she'd keep quiet. She squirmed, dislodging him. Grunting, he repositioned her and latched onto her clit. At the same time, one psychic finger pushed into her pussy, making it blaze unbearably.
"Come, but be quiet."
It was an order, and her body automatically responded to it. She bit into the pillow as wave after wave of pleasure crashed into her, racking her body. The pillow disappeared. And there was Knox. The ice-cold finger dissipated, making her pussy blaze and spasm. Then, psychic hands lifted her trembling thighs, angling her hips. Knox licked along the collar of thorns on her throat.
You're like a drug.
Drugs are bad for you.
His mouth curved.
Not this drug. It's new on the street, but only I get to have it.
She laughed. Knox placed the head of his cock near her opening, but he didn't push inside. He stayed there, let her feel him, let her know what was coming. She squirmed, trying to impale herself on him. He placed a splayed hand on her stomach and shook his head. Frustrated that he was making her wait, she snapped,
Okay, what do you want?
I have everything I want right here, baby. It's already mine. Now I'm going to take it.
He sucked her nipple into his mouth and slammed home. She inhaled sharply as his cock filled and stretched her just right, making all kinds of nerve endings spark and flame. It was almost painful, courtesy of the damn psychic fingers that always left her inner walls hypersensitive. She could feel every ridge, every vein, every throb.
That's it. Don't make a sound.
Her eyes called him evil. Knox dragged his teeth down her neck and gave her pulse a sharp bite. Her hot, wet pussy tightened around his cock.
Nothing feels better than this.
Then he fucked her, hard, deep, slamming in and out of her, loving the prick of her nails on his back.
I wanted to do this all fucking day.
Fisting her hair, Knox bit and sucked at her neck, leaving little marks of possession that his demon loved to look at. Feeling her pussy flutter around him, Knox thrust harder, faster. She sank her teeth around his shoulder as she came, but he didn't stop. He kept pounding into her, pushing her closer and closer to yet another orgasm.
Now, let me hear you.
You're a bastard,
she burst out. If he wasn't out of his mind with need, he would have laughed. Instead, he watched her face, savoring her moans, throaty little whimpers, and the hot clasp of her pussy.
Let me feel you come.
An ice-cold, psychic finger flicked her clit. And Harper arched into Knox as her release crashed into her, trapping a scream in her throat. She felt his cock swell as he slammed into her twice, and then his spine locked, and she felt every splash of his cum. Panting and tremoring, she had to ask,
How are you still hard?
He sighed.
You always ask me that. Why?
You just fucked me into oblivion. You should have no energy.
He licked at the anchor mark on the hollow beneath her ear. She'd left a similar mark on his, effectively branding him as her anchor.
I can't be inside you and not be hard.
He rolled them both onto their sides, keeping her close. Feeling him stroke her back, Harper knew he was searching for any slices that hadn't yet completely healed.
They're gone, she assured him.
Though he was pretty sure that was in fact the case, Knox needed to see that for himself. He gently turned her onto her stomach and swept his hand down her sleek back. No wounds, no blemishes, no trace that she'd ever been hurt. There was only the tattoo-like marks of her wings. Relieved, Knox pressed a kiss between her shoulder blades, silently promising not to allow anyone to take the wings from her. And when he found the person who sent those hunters her way, he'd make what the hunters went through seem like a fucking pleasure cruise. Chapter 5 The coffee house was always fairly busy in the mornings, so Harper was used to standing in the long line. Patience wasn't her strong point, but it would be worth the wait. She didn't need to look at the menu board or the chalkboard advertising the specials. She always ordered a caramel latte. It had become her ritual, and nowhere did lattes better than this place. She stood there, surrounded by the sounds of chatting, the hum of the blenders and espresso machines, and the clatter of mugs and dishes being stacked in the dishwasher. She didn't mind the noise, though. She did mind that her tongue was burning like crazy for no apparent reason. Hopefully, the latte would help with that. Harper inhaled deeply, taking in the comfortable smells and coffee beans. She loved it. Loved how the scents of chocolate, cinnamon, caramel, and nutmeg blended so nicely with it. Usually, she'd be tempted by the pastries inside the glass case. Honestly, she was more interested in snatching the tall canister of whipped cream and eating it all to herself. An interest she would, of course, totally ignore, because it was just plain weird. Tanner and the girls were gathered around the bistro table near the window. It had become their spot. Tanner, as usual, was flicking through a newspaper, but Harper knew he was fully aware of everything going on around him. Finally reaching the front of the line, Harper smiled at the barista.
Morning. Good morning. I placed your usual order as soon as I spotted you. It should be ready by now.
It was something the she-demon often did, since they always ordered the same things.
Thank you.
Harper handed her the money and, after placing her change in the tip jar, headed to the end of the counter. There, another barista was placing cups on a tray. This particular she-demon, Wren, reminded Harper of one of her cousins. She was bright, ditzy, and extremely quirky. She smiled at Harper.
Got your order right here.
She placed one of the cups in Harper's hand.
Try this instead of a latte.
Harper sniffed.
What is it?
Just frothed vanilla milk.
But I love my lattes.
Harper was ashamed to say she almost whined that.
I know, but spice is the variety of life, or whatever.
Her brow creased in concern as she added,
I heard about the attack. How are you?
Harper wasn't surprised that the news was getting around. The demonic grapevine worked at a seriously fast speed.
I'm fine, thanks. I'll feel even better if you give me my latte.
Wren smiled.
Not scared of a little milk, are you?
Harper felt her lips quirk.
You can be weird sometimes, you know?
Wren's eyes twinkled.
Maybe we're twins.
Harper laughed.
Maybe.
A whistle made her look over her shoulder. Devon was stood at the condiment trolley, tapping her watch impatiently. Harper rolled her eyes and turned back to Wren.
I'll try the damn milk.
She took a cautious sip. Harper had always been a caramel girl, but the frothed vanilla tasted super good. Even better, it seemed to soothe her burning tongue. Still, Harper made a put-out huff.
Fine. I'll take it.
Wren chuckled.
You're welcome.
Yeah, yeah.
Lifting the tray, Harper headed to Devon, who then quickly helped her add sugar, milk, and other toppings to the drinks.
I'll carry the tray, said Devon. You waited in the line.
Fine with that, Harper turned and almost bumped right into none other than Carla. Well, fuck a freaking duck. Her inner demon hissed, having no time or patience for this woman who'd abandoned them. It was the first time Harper had come face to face with her since before Roan's death. The resentful glitter in her eyes told her that Carla wasn't there to check that she'd recovered from the hunter's attack. No surprise there. Harper was conscious that the chatter had died down and everyone was watching, waiting to see how it would play out. Carla would no doubt be thrilled about that. She did so love being the center of attention. Such was the life of a narcissist. Part of Harper felt sorry for this person who was so emotionally stunted that she was still stuck at the infantile age where her own wants and needs were more important than those of others. Because of the gaping emotional hole inside her, she'd always perpetually seek the attention that she needed just as intensely as an addict needed crack. And Carla's drug of choice seemed to be sympathy. She was a never-ending victim, and drama made her feel alive somehow. As such, she was milking whatever sympathy she could get for having lost her son. Maybe Harper's thoughts should have shown a little more sensitivity to Carla's current situation. After all, the woman was grieving. But honestly, Harper didn't believe that Carla could experience grief the way others did. She just didn't seem truly capable of forming an emotional connection with anyone. Neither of her sons had a kind word to say about her, which was telling. And loving a person often meant putting them first, and Carla was far too self-absorbed to put anyone before herself. Tanner was instantly at Harper's side, his stance protective.
"There an issue here?"
"There could be," Harper replied.
"I wouldn't advise you to say whatever it is that's going through your mind, Carla," said Devon.
None of the girls had ever liked Carla, particularly Chloe, who insisted on referring to both Harper's parents as merely her primary blood relations. Carla's shoulders lifted as she took in a long breath. Apart from their small figure, pointed chin, and dark hair, they didn't share much resemblance at all. It was something Harper, petty though it might be, was thankful for.
"I just want to say one thing."
Harper doubted she would only say one thing. Carla loved the sound of her own voice.
"Rowan, he had his faults," Carla continued. "He wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. But he wouldn't ever have considered being part of some scheme to see the U.S. primes overthrown. It doesn't even make sense. He would never have benefited from it."
"Okay." Carla blinked.
"Okay?"
"There's nothing at all that I could say that would appease you. If you wish to believe he wasn't part of it, who am I to interfere with that?" Harper had no intention of giving the woman the argument she was looking for.
"But you don't agree with me," Carla pushed.
"It's possible that he was lying, but I don't see why he would have."
"But maybe you're the one who's lying," Harper's demon snarled.
"And would I?
Maybe you're jealous that I kept him, but I gave you away."
Harper couldn't help it. She laughed, but it wasn't a pleasant sound.
"Oh yeah, Carla, you got me there," she said dryly.
There were a few snickers. Carla's expression was hard as stone.
"Doesn't it bother you that you killed your own brother?"
Did it bother Harper that she'd been in a position where she'd had to kill him or be killed by him? Yes. Did it bother her that he was dead? No. Rowan had conspired against the U.S. primes. Worse, he'd wanted Knox dead. That was something Harper would never forgive or excuse.
"You might not have liked him, but I loved him. I..."
Harper took a single step toward her, eating up her personal space.
"Do you know what he did while I was tied to a table? He took a pair of scissors, and he cut into my earlobe, claiming you'd once done the same thing to him."
Carla's eyes flickered. The twisted bitch had done it. "From what he told me, That wasn't an isolated incident. You'd hurt him before that, and you hurt him again afterward. Play the devastated, crumbling mother if you want, Carla. But don't expect me to buy it. There was a huff, and then another voice spoke.
You never could resist causing a scene, could you, Carla?
Harper peered over Carla's shoulder to see a small old woman in a gypsy dress. It was Nora, the grandmother of one of the primes, Dario. Harper had only met her once before, when they learned that Nora had premonitions. To be specific, she knew and felt events that would soon occur. It was through Nora that Harper and Knox had learned about the four horsemen. Nora hadn't seen Rowan's face, but she'd known through her ability what his motivations were. She'd warned them that the person pulling Crow's strings was cold and power-hungry, with a void that would always leave him unsatisfied with life. Frowning at Carla in both disappointment and impatience, Nora added,
"Do you not think you've done enough to this girl?"
Looking like she was sucking on a lemon, Carla said,
"She killed
a son you mistreated and controlled, from what I heard,"
Nora finished.
"A son you didn't see as a person in his own right. He was only ever an extension of you. It was little wonder he grew to be greedy for power. He spent so many years under your rule that he needed the greatest power possible to feel in control. Or, at least, that is what everyone is speculating."
Cheeks reddening, Carla hissed,
"He was not one of the horsemen, if the horsemen even exist."
"Oh, they exist. And he was one of them. Never doubt it. The only person at fault for his death is Rowan. He made his choices. They were bad choices that could only ever have resulted in his own demise."
Before Carla could say another word in her son's defense, Tanner forced her to step aside and said,
"You've said your piece. Now it's over. Get the fuck out of our way."
Once Carla shuffled to the side, Nora gestured for Harper to move forward, and then linked her arm through hers. Instead of escorting Harper to the bistro table, Nora headed straight out the door with Tanner close behind them. Outside, Nora said,
"There. Now, take a breath."
Harper settled her hands on her hips as she inhaled deeply, urging her pissed-the-fuck-off demon to calm down. The entity despised Carla, and always would. Nora patted her back.
"You were right to believe there's nothing you can say that will appease her. She'll never accept that Rowan was virtually responsible for his own death."
"Yeah, I know," said Harper. "I can understand why she wouldn't want to acknowledge what he did."
"It doesn't make it okay that she just confronted you in there,"
Tanner clipped. No, it didn't, which was why her demon wanted Harper to go back inside the coffee house and bitch-slap her. Instead, Harper spoke to Nora.
"I hope you're not here because you've had some kind of bad premonition."
The woman cackled, sounding just like Jolene.
"No premonition. I heard you were attacked by hunters, so when I saw you inside the coffee house, I took the opportunity to check that you're healed."
"I'm fine," Harper told her. "Pissed, of course, but otherwise okay."
Nora opened her mouth to speak again, but then the bell chimed as the coffee house door opened. The girls all filed out, carrying their mugs. Technically, they weren't supposed to take the mugs, but Harper doubted the baristas would give them a hard time about it as long as they returned them.
"You okay?"
Rainey asked. Harper nodded.
"It's not exactly the first time she saw fit to cause a scene."
Chloe sneered at Carla through the glass window.
It's what attention junkies do.
Come on, began Devon, leading Chloe toward the studio.
Let's get inside, or we'll be late opening up.
Nodding, Harper smiled at Nora. It was good to see you. Tell Dario I said hi. Nora patted her arm.
Will do. Take care of yourself, Harper.
She waved at the others and then walked away. Rainey unlocked the studio door, and they all strode inside.
You sure you're okay?
She asked Harper.
Fine.
Harper sipped at her drink. Not looking forward to telling Knox about it, though. He'll be pissed. And he'd no doubt point out that if she'd stayed home, she could have escaped the ugly encounter, blah, blah, blah. He'd be wrong, though. Carla would have found another opportunity to confront her.
You should tell him now before someone else does, Tanner advised. What's that you're drinking?
Frothed vanilla milk, apparently. Devon frowned.
Since when do you drink frothed vanilla milk?
Since the barista gave it to me to try. And since it eased a weird burn on her tongue. It's good.
Knox, you busy?
His mind brushed against hers.
Never too busy to talk to you. Everything okay?
I just wanted to let you know, and it's no big deal, I'm not upset. That Carla caused a little scene in the coffee house. It wasn't bad, she quickly added. There was no yelling or threats or anything. She just made it clear that she doesn't believe Rowan was one of the horsemen.
There was complete silence.
Knox?
A vibe of anger touched her mind.
I'll deal with it.
No, I already dealt with it. I'm just telling you because I figured you'd want to know.
She has no right to confront you, Harper.
No, she doesn't. So I dealt with it. She'll be gone from the lair soon. Don't give her the satisfaction of a reaction.
Carla was the type of person who found bad attention better than no attention, which was just plain pathetic in Harper's opinion.
She's not important. Let her see that.
There was a long silence.
Fine. But if she tries anything else...
He let the sentence trail, but the threat was clear.
I understand.
His mind stroked hers once again, comforting her, and then he was gone. And as her stomach unexpectedly churned and lethargy quickly crept up on her, she started to wish she'd stayed home. Keenan sank into the chair in front of Knox's office desk and slapped a piece of paper on it.
I was hoping there would only be a few collectors of demonic wings and that this would be a process of elimination. If only life was that simple.
Knox picked up the sheet of paper and scanned the long list of names, doing his best to shove aside his anger at Carla Hayden. The she-demon had done enough damage to Harper. She had no right to even speak to her, let alone confront her. But he'd respect Harper's wishes as long as Carla kept a distance from her from this point onwards.
Those people are simply the ones who are known to buy them on the black market. There'll be God knows how many more.
The incubus pulled a flask out of the inside of his jacket and took a swig.
There's one guy in particular who I think we should be looking at. He's the main collector of Sphinx wings. His name is Francisco Alanez.
Knox frowned.
I recognize the name, but I don't believe I've met him.
He's a casting agent who runs his own very successful agency in Malibu. He represents a lot of celebrities, sportsmen, and other media professionals.
He's also Thatcher's cousin. Keenan's blue eyes hardened.
Funny how Thatcher was one of the demons we were recently investigating as a possible horseman when, bam, Harper was attacked.
Knox stilled as the implications sank into his brain.
I've considered that the hunters were sent as a distraction. We've been actively investigating the identities of the other two horsemen for some time now. I wondered if maybe we got too close.
The main reason he'd suspected Thatcher was that the Prime was an incantor. Only blood magic could have extracted Lawrence Crow from Knox's prison, which meant that either one of the horsemen was an incantor, or that they'd hired one to free Crow. Knox had to explore both possibilities. His demons had been discreet in investigating Thatcher, but that didn't mean the Prime hadn't somehow found out about it.
"Thatcher's a strong incantor who's been known to use blood magic in the past," said Keenan. "But what really interests me about this guy is that he seems to be the only Prime who isn't looking into the matter of the horsemen."
Levi's eyes narrowed.
"That could mean he thinks the theory is bullshit, or that he sees no need to investigate it because he knows exactly who they are. If he did set his cousin's sights on Harper, we may have made Thatcher nervous. But I don't see how he could have known that Harper's wings came to her."
"Maybe he didn't know," suggested Larkin, sitting on the sofa near the window that overlooked the combat circle beneath the office. "Maybe he thought he was lying to the hunters." Knox inclined his head at the harpy.
"True, but whoever did it would have known that we'd do our best to track who hired the hunters. That trail has led to his cousin, which puts Thatcher in our sights. He's smart. Would he really do anything to turn our attention to him that way?"
Levi rubbed at his nape.
"It could be that he didn't expect you to get your hands on the hunters and find out they'd been hired. Hunters often act alone."
"From what I learned, Francisco isn't known to hire hunters," said Keenan. "I also learned that his father and brother were sphinxes, both of whom he hated right up until the day he killed them. It's believed that their wings were the first to be hung on his wall. If that's true, they're probably like trophies to him," said Larkin, toying with her long braid. "Maybe the other wings belong to people he wanted dead."
Knox's thoughts exactly. "We need to hear what Francisco has to say. But I don't have the patience to take the trip using the private jet."
He needed answers yesterday.
Sure, he could pyroport to Malibu, but not many knew he had that ability.
Knox liked to keep the demon world guessing on what he could or couldn't do. It made it hard for them to work out just what breed of demon he was. If they ever did, they'd no doubt unite against Knox in the hope of killing him. It wouldn't work, of course, but he'd prefer not to have to wipe out most of the demonic population.
"We could use Armand," suggested Larkin, referring to a member of the Force who had the ability to teleport. "He could take us to Francisco."
Knox nodded.
"Summon him."
Moments later, there was a knock at the door.
"Come in,"
said Knox. Armand strolled inside, no doubt having teleported outside the office after receiving Larkin's telepathic summons.
"We need you to teleport us somewhere,"
Knox told him.
"How many can you teleport at one time?"
The tall, bald demon said,
"Four, including myself."
Knox twisted his mouth.
"Is there a limit to how far you can go?" "I've yet to have a problem reaching a destination."
Keenan rattled off the address of Francisco's Malibu office.
"Can you take us there?"
"Absolutely,"
said Armand.
"When?" "No time like the present," said Knox.
Resting his clasped hands on his office desk, Francisco Alanis smiled, making the lines of his tanned face deepen. Knox had always thought that the purpose of fake tan was for it to appear natural, not to look literally fake. Maybe Francisco's skin wouldn't have seemed quite so dark if his hair wasn't so light. Knox accepted the invitation to sit opposite Francisco, but he didn't return the smile. It was possible that this demon was responsible for what happened to Harper. Knox wanted to shove the guy against the wall and threaten to cut him open and yank out each and every one of his organs. But Knox knew better than to ease the reins on his control. He also had to bear in mind that the horsemen wanted him to lose it. They persistently targeted Harper because they believed she was his one weakness. They were correct about that. He did have the option of simply thrusting his mind into Francisco's to find the truth for himself, but it wasn't an act that Knox enjoyed doing. It meant sieving through a person's thoughts, fantasies, memories, and secrets. It was always an overload of information, information he would often rather not have known. Also, walking around, thrusting his mind into that of others, would make Knox seem weak. In a sense, make him seem like he didn't trust his own judgment. It would also lose him the respect of many, since it was indeed a violation. He only did it when absolutely necessary.
I must say, it was quite a surprise when my receptionist announced that Knox Thorne was outside my office,
Francisco told him, eyes briefly flicking to Levi, who was stood against the far wall. Only Levi had entered the office with Knox. The others were standing guard outside the door, which Francisco's receptionist wasn't too happy about. Francisco leaned back in his chair.
So, what brings you here, Mr. Thorne? Do you need representation?
No, I have some questions for you.
Oh, shame. You've got the face and charisma that would take you far in this industry.
Knox got right to the point.
My mate was attacked recently.
Expression sympathetic. Francisco sighed.
Yes, I heard about that. They were hunters, correct? Yes. They were under the mistaken impression that she has wings. She's fully healed. She fought them, which they should have anticipated. Still, it isn't enough for me that I killed the hunters who attacked her.
Knox's voice hardened as he added,
I want the demon who hired them.
Francisco sat up straight.
They were hired?
Yes. Someone hired them to obtain her wings. My first thought was that it could be a collector.
Realization dawned on Francisco's face.
Ah, I see. You've heard about the wings that are displayed on my wall at home.
He sighed.
The only wings on my wall belong to my dead relatives. Demons I despised for one reason or another. In truth, I don't care much for Sphinx wings. I'm not interested in collecting them.
Yet you display them on your wall.
I took the part of those demons that defined them. You see, in my family, the Sphinxes are considered the superior breed. I'm a Reaper, just like my mother. She and I have never been good enough for the others. What makes them so different from us? Nothing. They're not more powerful. They're not stronger. Yet some of them felt that they had the right to fuck with me and hurt my mother. So he'd stolen from them the one true thing that made the Sphinxes so very different from Francisco and his mother, Knox realized. I don't hire hunters, Mr. Thorne. And I do my own dirty work, no matter how dirty it is. Mostly because I don't like to owe people anything.
Knox's instincts told him that Francisco was telling the truth.
I see. Any ideas on who the demon that hired the hunters could be? They sent the hunters an anonymous encrypted email that deleted itself soon after being read.
Francisco rubbed at his jaw.
I've heard of the method, but there's only one person who I personally know that uses it.
Who?
His name's Dion Boughton. He's a collector of many things, not just wings. If you're looking for someone who refuses to get his hands dirty but will risk any wrath to add things to his collection, you should look to him. He has a museum inside his home. From what I've heard, he also collects people.
People?
Knox echoed.
He likes to surround himself with the unique, which could have a lot to do with him being a very average person.
Both Harper and her wings were indeed unique, so Knox would definitely be having a chat with Dion.
He won't be easy to speak with.
He lives on a private island, which is psychically shielded. If you want to speak to him, you'll need an invite.
Do you have his number?
Francisco clasped his hands again.
He doesn't have a phone.
Levi's brows drew together.
Who doesn't have a phone?
He's a technophobe. He rejects any advances in technology, especially anything that interferes with personal privacy like social media,
said Francisco.
He's also a bit of a recluse. He doesn't accept many visitors on his island.
He turned back to Knox.
If you wish to get in touch with him, you'll need to write to him.
Knox frowned.
Write to him? How archaic.
Levi chuckled.
I have his address.
Francisco retrieved a small, leather-bound file from his desk drawer and flicked through it until he settled on a specific page.
Just send a quick note expressing your wish to meet with him. He should reply within a few days, a week at most.
Knox took the slip of paper on which Francisco had jotted down Dion's address.
How is your cousin, Thatcher?
The abrupt change of subject made Francisco double blink.
I haven't heard from him in a while. We don't talk much.
If you do speak with him, pass on my best wishes.
I will do, Mr. Thorne.
Knox gave a curt nod and stood. He held Francisco's gaze as he warned,
If I find out that you've lied to me about anything here today, I'll come for you.
Francisco swallowed.
I'd expect nothing less.
Good. We'll see ourselves out.
Chapter 6. Why do you always take me to weird places to do lessons? Harper griped.
I don't take you to weird places, said Knox, standing in front of her. I take you to deserted places where there'll be no witnesses.
Well, this place is certainly deserted.
Harper's nose wrinkled at the smells of mildew, chalky dust, and sun-warmed stone.
Look at the situation this way. You're seeing ancient ruins that have yet to be discovered by humans. That means we won't be seen by tourists, hikers, or archaeologists. And if the flames do get out of hand, all they'll destroy are building spires and stone pillars that are already crumbling.
He was right, Harper thought, as she glanced around. Everything was weather-worn and covered in moss, thick, ropey vines.